You're listening to Enterprise Software Unwrapped, an audio download from Information Age and sponsored by Tipco. Enterprise Software Unwrapped is a series of six short audio programs produced monthly, in which we explore some of the current issues and emerging technologies in enterprise software today. To find out more, and for details on how to automatically receive updates direct to your MP3 player, visit information-age.com/infocasts.
Hello, my name is Andrew Lawrence. I'm the editorial director of Information Age magazine. In the next 20 minutes, we're going to be exploring one of the most exciting ideas in enterprise IT today, the predictive enterprise. The premise of the predictive enterprise is that many events, especially in business, can be foreseen because they're the direct result of one or probably many previous events. And if we can foresee that a certain event will happen, let's say a decision by a customer not to buy a product, then we can do something about that, such as offering that customer a discount just before they make that fateful decision. So let's start by hearing from the man most associated with a predictive enterprise, Vivek Ranadive. Ranadive is a member of a pretty exclusive club. Not only is he the CEO of a major NASDAQ-listed company, but he's also the author of two books. The first, The Power of Now, published in 1999, was all about the importance of being able to see and react in real time in modern business. But his new book, The Power to Predict, now argues that being real time is not enough. I caught up with Vivek at his book launch in Paris recently, and I asked him to explain how he himself made the journey from the real time enterprise that features in his first book to the predictive enterprise. That's the subject of his second.
The concept behind the first book was if you could operate your business in real time, if you could react instantaneously to threats and opportunities and run your business instantaneously, then you would have a huge advantage. A couple of years ago, customers, friends, colleagues started asking me if real time was the end of the road, and if there was anything better than real time. And my initial reaction was, no, how do you possibly improve on the speed of light? But as I started thinking about it, I realized that while real time was great, it was still reactive. And the way to improve on that was to become proactive. And I call this being predictive. So if you can anticipate what's going to happen before it happens, then you're ahead of the game.
So, before we get too technical, let's take some examples of how predictive technology is being or might be used. One of Vivek Ranadive's old Harvard colleagues was Gary Loveman, who's now the CEO of Harrah's, the successful casino operator. Harrah's, says Ranadive, is a textbook example of how predictive technology can be used.
So in the case of Harrah's, the way Gary tells the story, 40 million customers come to Harrah's every day to lose money. So how does Gary get these guys to keep coming back?
The answer is that Harrah's tries to ensure that its customers are happy by giving them rewards that compensate them when they lose. But that means they must know who they are and what they are doing. It means every event must be tracked.
Every single customer is identified by category. So you have a gold, you have a diamond, you have a platinum customer. And everyone has an electronic card. And so using real-time technology, Gary knows how much money is being spent by every customer in real-time.
That is not so unusual, but this is where it gets clever. All this activity is tracked in a loyalty index, which is affected by events that happen to each customer, such as winning and losing.
Using predictive technology, he can also predict what's going to happen with that customer.
That means that Harrah's can anticipate, based on knowledge it holds in the database, that this customer is likely to become very disenchanted with Harrah's if he loses more than, say, $100 in a given period. Murat Somnez, who's the Executive Vice President of Strategic Markets at Tipco, picks up the story using the example of one gambler who he calls Declan.
If, let's say, Declan is a conservative gambler, if he loses $100 in 30 minutes. As we get close to that 30-minute threshold, our reaction to that event will change, will be different than if we're at the beginning of that threshold. Now, right. As we get closer to that, we don't want him to feel bad, so we start offering him things that are relevant to him.
As Sonmez explains, an important part of this technology is the ability to maintain state. That means the ability to keep a track of what is happening in real time and to be able to react immediately as events change. There are many other areas where this technology works well. TIBCO, for example, has a customer in telecoms who uses event processing to track and contact customers who were about to buy a product over the phone but then got interrupted. In another example, a railroad operator has been able to reduce the time its freight trains spend in the sidings by anticipating events that might cause delays and then acting to overcome these problems. Vivek Ranadeev begins a list of examples by citing a very common problem: disruptions in the supply chain that cause a shortage of products on the shelves, forcing customers to buy from competitors.
So using the concepts of predictive technology, you can actually anticipate what's going to happen in that supply chain. And before it actually happens, you can take preventive measures and make sure that there's product on the shelf. You can anticipate what's going to happen in your network. And before you have a network outage, you can reroute traffic, you can make amends and prevent your customers from being impacted by that kind of an outage. In the United States, we've had several examples where a couple of years ago we had a massive flu vaccine shortage. No reason for that to ever reoccur. We could have looked at a chain of events and we could have anticipated what was going to happen and prevented that from happening. We had a power outage on the eastern seaboard. Again, you know, we could have anticipated what's going to happen, prevented that from happening. So this kind of technology is applicable in all kinds of problems. And I would argue that even in areas like terrorism, you could apply these concepts. There's no reason to make each and every person wait in a long, long line and to evaluate each and every person and strip search them.
So what's the big innovation at the heart of all of this? Perhaps the key component of this predictive technology is the predictive engine, the so-called correlation engine. This is the complex event processing software that is able to calculate in real time what new events or actions should result or might result from many preceding or subsidiary events. This needs to be pretty smart and fast if it's to provide answers in real time. And to get this working, it called for a new set of algorithms that are easy for programmers to work with. That work was pioneered by Professor David Luckham of Stanford University, who was at one time one of the co-founders of Rational Software.
The idea behind CEP is that we can get a lot of insight into how to manage our enterprises from the information flowing through the IT layers of the enterprise. Simply because things have become a lot more event-driven. And I call this insight IT to management insight. Now, complex event processing was developed in the mid-1990s as a set of principles for building solutions that provide this kind of IT to management insight. CEP lays out a set of event processing principles and techniques. For example, use all the relationships between events, not only timing, which most applications were using, but also causality, independence, membership. Higher level events are made up of lots of lower level events. So use abstraction and hierarchies of events to simplify information that's carried by lots of lower level events.
But the CEP engine is only part of it. Murat Somnez simplifies it a bit for us by drawing an analogy with the human body.
The bus, the public-subscribe paradigm, is like the nervous system. It collects signals and it delivers signals. But it cannot do anything on its own. You need the brain to collect all these signals from the hand. You know, you have five senses, and you decide, sometimes intuitively, what to do. So the brain does that. So for us, the complex event processing engine is the brain. But then the brain on its own cannot take action. So you need the limbs and the muscles to take action. And the BPM piece is that. So the BPM piece helps us take action. The nervous system delivers all the signals. And the brain ignores most of it. But when it's critical, and based on past experience, again, that's where the state comes in, it decides, makes us do things.
Right.
Changes our feelings, it changes our physical reaction, and as well as emotional reaction.
So how does this relate to the technology that businesses might actually buy and install?
So if you look at our technology stack, we have the bus, the nervous system, that helps us capture the events. And the buzzword nowadays is enterprise service bus, as part of the SOA architecture. We have the CEP engine that plugs into the service bus that can collect events, filter the relevant ones, and apply rules to predict what may happen. And then it publishes an alert. It says, this is about to happen, take action.
All this sounds very persuasive, but it's also very controversial. There is, to a point, an implicit and perhaps even explicit attack on the effectiveness of many of today's software architectures. Vivek Ranadev again.
The architecture of the past dealt with static data. Static data is no longer adequate. We live in a real-time, global, web-based world, and so you need to deal with both data at rest and data in motion, static and dynamic data. The building block of the past was the database. This is not going to fly in the future. In the future, we're going to shift from a database-oriented architecture to a service-oriented architecture. The fundamental building block around which enterprise architectures will be constructed will not be a big, monolithic, centralized database.
Right.
It'll be an enterprise-wide service bus on which anyone can add value, can provide services.
Although it's clear from this that Ranadev is launching a direct attack on some of the world's biggest software companies, their reaction is somewhat harder to read. That's because most of them agree with him to a certain point. They tend to see these new and old worlds as complementary. Ranadev, on the other hand, thinks the big database systems have a place, but only as services in a new and more distributed architecture. Let's take business intelligence as an example. BI is enjoying a wave of investment at the moment, and most of the products are marketed with the promise that they will help users react to changing events with more agility.
What the business intelligence providers do is they allow you to reflect on the past. They allow you to look at the days, weeks, months in the past and to analyze and reflect on that data. What predictive business allows you to do is it allows you to anticipate the future. It allows you to look at what's going to happen and before it actually happens to activate business processes that take advantage of potential opportunities or prevent potential threats.
Not many business intelligence vendors are going to agree with that analysis. But surprisingly, I found that Ranadev's views are quite widely shared and from some unexpected quarters. I asked Stephen Brobes, the Chief Technology Officer of Teradata, the data warehousing software company, if he thinks a lot of BI and analytics today is too backward-looking and needs to be more predictive.
I would absolutely agree. The old style of passive business intelligence, I think, delivers less than 5% of the value that the capabilities can do. And that's why we use this term active data warehousing to really embody the notion that the value is in the active use of the information to execute the business strategy, not just the retrospective looking at it. So you need to do both. I think that sophisticated event processing requires both the historical data and the current data. If you look at the current data in isolation, you actually don't get the right view of what's going on. You need to look at the current data in the context of history. We view event-based decision-making and software event detection as absolutely critical for business intelligence. My ideal world is there would never be another report. I think reports are largely useless because what happens is people get these reports and they're looking for the numbers to tell them what to go do something. Well, why don't we just go find the numbers of interest, create an event that says, ah, here's the event, you have this piece of inventory which has been on hand, it's going to go obsolete in the next 3 days, you need to do something about it.
I also asked David Luckham at Stanford University if he thought that ultimately real-time business intelligence systems and complex event processing systems would prove competitive or complementary.
The devil's in the details, I'm afraid. It depends upon what kinds of techniques you're using on real-time databases and what you mean by a real-time database. Now, let's take an example. Suppose you're processing a stock market feed at very high event throughput speeds, and you're computing various averages and deviations from averages to support electronic arbitrage operations at the millisecond granularity. You might be using streaming SQL, which is a new variation of the old database SQL. But the fact is that the queries are being applied to events in the stream before they get into any kind of database. So I would probably tend to agree with the CEP enthusiasts here. However, we need to bear in mind that there's a lot we can learn from data mining that will help CEP applications.
So what do we make of all of this? Well, it seems that the consensus here is that business intelligence has a role to play, a big role, but it needs to deliver its findings in a faster, more event-based manner, and that these events will need to be plugged into a wider event-driven system. So how practical and how imminent is a predictive enterprise? Certainly, there are businesses today, such as Harrah's and certain others in telecoms, financial services and transport, who have event-driven systems that are working and are working well. But these are very much in the minority at the moment. Even so, the consensus seems to be it's very desirable, it's very powerful, and it will happen. It's just a matter of when. Certainly, David Luckham thinks complex event processing is going to happen.
Well, my feeling is that CEP is a done deal, that you really can't do without it. Remember, CEP is a set of event processing principles and techniques. Given the real-time event-driven nature of the world we're living in now, enterprise management has to use the information carried by the events in its IT infrastructure. So CEP will continue to creep into management tools, along with lots of other things.
One of the attendees at Ranadi's book launch in Paris was Bernard Bourigeaud, the CEO of the large European systems integration company, Atos Origin. What did he make of it all?
So I think being predictive means that you know in detail your client, what they think, what they want, what they need, and you also design a kind of behavior profile of your client, and that's where it goes very far, okay? Because the concept is right. The difficulty is to get there. I mean, Vivek is explaining. He's probably in many CEOs' minds as a dream.
The difficulty, however, does not mean it's not worth doing. Vivek Ranadiv concludes on a very upbeat note.
This is a technology that can revolutionize business, it can revolutionize government, and it can revolutionize the consumer experience. This is happening, and it'll in the next 3 to 5 years, the companies and governments that implement it first will be ahead of everyone else.
You have been listening to Enterprise Software Unwrapped, an audio download from Information Age, sponsored by TIBCO. To find out more about this and other programs in this series, visit information-age.com/infocasts.